Hello?
Hello.
Hi, Sandra.
How are you?
Good. So we are now recording.
Okay.
So I'm going to begin our session. Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's Mental Health Minute seminar. Thank you for joining us. Today's topic is going to be workplace and mental health. And with us today, we're going to have Sandra Moll, our guest speaker. So I'm going to begin. My name is Dr. Tom Unger. I'm a psychiatrist. I work currently in Toronto at the North York General Hospital, and I'm shortly going to become associate professor at the University of Toronto, where I do a lot of work with the community and with our family physicians here. This seminar is part of a project with our project partners, the National Network for Mental Health, the Mood Disorders Association of Ontario, the Participants Council of North York General Hospital, and the Ontario Association of Patient Councils, as part of a project that we have put together funded by the Canadian Council on Learning, the CCL, entitled Improving Mental Health Services Through Informed Choice, a Bottom-Up Approach to Changing Provider Behavior. And as part of our project, we are trying to provide useful, interesting, and requested information on a variety of mental health topics so that we can empower the public and the community so that they can make good choices in terms of their own health care and health promotion. Part of this project includes some services we provide, such as a website where you can access information, as well as this recording and this podcast will be available shortly on our website, the address being www.mentalhealthminute.com. The idea behind the website, again, is to provide consumer-friendly, regular language information on a variety of mental health topics for health promotion and health information. We have credible evidence-based links that we recommend on a variety of topics. So rather than repeat everything about every condition, the idea is just to get people there for a start to see if they're interested and help them climb up the ladder of information to a point that they find helpful. As well, we have a variety of basic practical treatment guidelines on some topics people can read about so that you can take information to your health provider and make sure you're getting some of the most current evidence-based treatments if you think they're relevant to you or for other family members. We have a variety of other services on the website. We have some audio minutes, 1 or 2 minute information segments, some interesting vodcasts or video minutes, so you can actually watch a TV-style commercial, which are now posted on videos on the website, as well as some other links. And there is a survey so that we can make sure we're providing the type of information you find helpful that you can complete by clicking on our survey. So that's a very basic thing about the mentalhealthminute.com website. And we are very excited with our partners to be providing good, useful information. One of the things we've been doing are teleseminars, and this is one of our teleseminars. People can call in over the telephone and listen or play that off the recording on the website. So we are now recording this session, and I'm very excited to introduce our speaker and guest today, Sandra Moll. Hi, Sandra, are you there?
I am here.
Great. So I'll just introduce you briefly, and you can supplement if I make some mistakes. Sandra is by training an occupational therapist who worked for over 10 years in a community mental health setting with severe and persistent mental health problems in people. She has then been an assistant clinical professor at the School of Rehabilitation Sciences at McMaster University for about 10 years. And she's currently doing her PhD doctoral studies through the School of Public Health Sciences at the University of Toronto. She's been developing some interesting work, I understand, as part of her PhD, a handbook on psychiatric mental health outline for employers and workplace, because mental health in the workplace and getting people in their recovery back to work is really full recovery and functioning our ultimate goal. So welcome, Sandra.
Thank you.
So why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself, if I've left anything out, and then just go ahead, and I'll just jump in as we listen.
Okay. Thank you. I wear many hats, but what I'm going to focus on today and the information I'm going to talk about is based on a project that I have been involved with over the past year connected with the Canadian Psychiatric Research Foundation. I was hired by CPRF last fall to develop a handbook for employers on how to address mental health problems in the workplace. Very interesting project involving a steering committee of stakeholders, including managers, human resource personnel, EAP providers, psychiatrists, occupational health physicians and nurses, insurance providers, union reps, researchers. and individuals who have been personally experienced mental health issues in the workplace. So it's been a really interesting project in terms of understanding different people's perspectives and talking about what information will be useful to kind of decrease some of the stigma around mental illness in the workplace. So I'm going to draw upon some of that information involved in developing that handbook, which was not only reviewing the literature, but talking to some of the experts in the field about best practices in workplace mental health.
I bet there'll be huge demand for that workbook when you get
done
with
that. Oh, yes, there already is, actually. Right now, and I've put the reference on your handout, which I'm assuming will be posted, will it?
Yes, if you send that to us, we'll post that on the mentalhealthminute.com website. Thank you.
So right now, this handbook is actually with the editors and should be available by fall 2007. And part of that handbook, it'll be at a nominal fee, but percentage of that fee will go towards mental health research in Canada. So anyway, the website is there on the handout, and watch for that. So what I'm going to do today is give you a bit of an overview about who's talking about mental health in the workplace, a little bit about the business case that has been made, and mental health problems that affect performance. I'm going to touch on some of the unique challenges related to mental health in the workplace, and finish off by sharing what we know so far about what works. And again, the handout lists some resources that I'll refer to throughout the handbook that I hope will be helpful. And my understanding is there's a wide range of people in the audience, so I hope the information will be at a level that's useful for you. Mental health and mental illness in the workplace is currently a very hot topic. I actually just came back from a conference in Vancouver on workplace mental health and addiction, sponsored by the Canadian Institutes for Health Information. And that conference had participants from all over the country, including business leaders, HR professionals, service providers, researchers, family members, and it really seems to be a topic which unites people, hopefully doesn't divide people, from various sectors of the business, health, and research community. And one of the speakers that sort of stood out for me was Bob Waite, who's the Senior VP of Stakeholder Relations and Brand at Canada Post. He was there and talked about making mental health in the workplace a key focus for Canada Post over the next few years. And his line that I wrote down was that he hopes that they can do for mental health in the workplace what CIBC has done for breast cancer research. And to me, that's very exciting, very encouraging, and again, I'm hoping we'll point to future directions around reducing some of the stigma around mental illness in the workplace.
That's very encouraging to hear.
Very encouraging. Yes. And so part of the momentum right now, I think, is due to the fact that employers are recognizing the cost of mental illness to their bottom line. So organizations such as the Global Business and Economic Roundtable, which I've listed on your handout, have been really instrumental in establishing the business case for the need to address mental illness in the workplace. And the Kirby Report, which reports on mental illness in Canada, had a whole section devoted to workplace mental health. So what is this business case that I refer to? So again, what has been established is that mental health is the fastest growing category of disability claims for Canadian businesses, accounting for anywhere between 4 to 12% of payroll costs. And again, there's websites that employers can go to. I think the BC website actually has a quick and easy thing that employers can enter in the number of employees and can actually calculate the cost to their bottom line.
Wow.
And employees with mental health problems are 2 to 3 times more likely to be absent from work than others. But in addition, they're more likely to have days when they're actually at work but not productive or unable to function at full capacity. So the new buzzword is not absenteeism, but actually presenteeism. And presenteeism is this new buzzword to describe the idea of lost productivity associated when employees show up to work but don't meet the functional requirements of the job.
So that's when I'm just sipping my coffee, staring at my screen, not getting much done for half an hour.
Yeah, certainly.
Before I notice what I'm doing, yeah.
An hour, right? So for workers with mental health problems, presenteeism is actually more of a significant issue even than the absenteeism. And it's hypothesized that many individuals go to work despite symptoms because of fears of stigma or discrimination. I might say financial necessity, and my actual doctoral work is I'm actually going to be interviewing workers who have mental health problems and ask them about their experience of working despite mental health problems, and try to explore and understand that a little bit better. So stigma is certainly a big issue in the workplace and one of the priority areas for future research in Canada. And what are the mental health problems that affect performance? So anxiety and depression are the most common. There's some studies showing that depression and anxiety disorders in some companies account for more than two-thirds of the short-term disability claims. And a lot of the research in this area is focusing on depression. And again, in your handout, there are a couple of hot-off-the-press handbooks produced by a group in BC on depression in the workplace. One is looks at depression and work function, looking at some of the current clinical and workplace issues, and one is actually a self-management tool around antidepressants called at the workplace, they call it, and they're free downloads from the BC group.
Do you have a website for that, by the way? You're referring to the BC?
Yes, it's in the handout. Yeah,
great. It's on our handout. Fabulous.
There, yeah, and it's a free download, and it's just recently produced.
Great.
So depression, anxiety are big issues. Substance use and addictions are also quite common. Not only alcohol and illicit drug use, but now there's more attention to the issue of gambling, internet addiction. When I was looking, we were doing some educational sessions, and I was looking for case scenarios to train people about mental health issues in the workplace. And someone described an employee who sits at his desk surfing the internet or playing games rather than focusing on his work. And again, you just described staring at your computer screen. So this idea of internet addiction is a new hot topic right now.
Right.
Other mental health problems include post-traumatic stress disorder, which is quite relevant to a number of occupations. One of our steering committee reps for CPRF works at the Toronto Transit Commission, mm-hmm. and certainly it's an issue for a number of their workers, emergency yes. workers, for example. Could also include learning and attention problems. Psychosis is less common but can be quite debilitating, and personality disorders.
Mm-hmm.
And those are all different kind of topics that we cover in the handbook because people are looking for information about how those issues uniquely affect performance in the workplace. And I should also note that the co-occurrence of physical and mental health problems is quite high. Employees with a chronic physical illness, such as back problems or a cardiac condition, are twice as likely to develop mental health problems, such as anxiety and depression. And the whole combination of physical and mental health issues can really complicate return to work.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of an overview of the issue. So what are people saying about challenges that we need to think about with respect to mental health problems in the workplace? And as part of this handbook development, we held a focus group last fall with over 70 stakeholders in the field. And we had representatives from both public and private business, large as well as small to mid-sized companies. And part of that meeting, we had people talk about what they see as the key challenges around mental illness in the workplace. And I could highlight the top six issues. You know, this is my David Letterman top six countdown.
Yes.
of issues people have identified. One was certainly this idea of legitimacy of mental health problems. And there was this very animated discussion about the concept of pout leave. So how can I tell if the person really has a mental health problem or whether they're just mad at the company?
Mm.
So this idea of do they have a legitimate problem or are they not to blame that it's a medical issue? And I could certainly have a very animated whole other session on this idea of legitimacy and stigma around mental illness in the workplace. So stigma and lack of understanding of mental health issues is a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
People talked about intolerance at all levels of the organization. I remember one of the members of our handbook development community telling us the story of what happened to her when she was off work due to major depression and describes this meeting with a company health nurse who told her something to the effect of, it must be nice just to be able to lie in bed all day and not have to come into work.
Oh, goodness.
And I was really taken aback by that. I mean, maybe we give some allowances for managers who don't have training in the area, but certainly didn't expect that from service providers. So again, really underlining this idea of lack of understanding and stigma around mental health issues.
Mm-hmm.
A third issue that people identified or challenged was this idea of poor communication at many levels. So if someone is off sick, there's many different players involved in the process, family doctors, mental health service providers in the community, maybe a disability case manager, insurance company, HR, managers, union reps. And the issue is that people don't necessarily communicate with each other. And it's a problem if no one takes responsibility for coordinating the return to work process. And part of it may be concerns about confidentiality, but unless there's someone to help pull things together, it can create a lot of problems. And for someone who's struggling with mental health issues, the whole process can be very overwhelming. And I came across a case in British Columbia where there's an individual who was struggling with mental health problems and his claim was denied. And he showed up in emergency in a very agitated state and ended up actually dying. I think he was shot in emergency. And what happened was it really in BC brought to light some of the extreme consequences of people falling through the cracks in the system. And the Canadian Mental Health Association generated a report on issues around the need for proper supports for employees who are off work due to mental health problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and particularly when one's suffering from a mental health condition, often your ability to concentrate and organize all those players and information and paperwork, that's probably one of the worst times to have to then meet that challenge, I would think.
Very difficult, and very difficult to advocate for yourself
yes.
as well, because you may not even understand what's going on
yes.
in your own life, right? So, yeah, a huge issue. A fourth issue people talked about was inadequate services, so delays in getting help. And this is probably very familiar to many of you, the long waiting lists for psychiatrists or even family doctors. Counseling services of psychologists are often not covered by public health insurance, and if there's even some coverage through work, often it's not coverage for enough sessions to have a significant impact. If there's an EAP provider, they may be good, but they're set up for short-term issues, not long-term intensive treatment that some people may need.
Mm-hmm.
So it may be also hard to find a service provider who has expertise related to both workplace and mental health issues. And people complaining about, you know, this person had a stress note from GP saying, oh, this person can't have any stress in return to work. And just some of the challenges, I guess, around what mental health issues mean and what return to work process and having people knowledgeable, I guess, in addressing those issues. Another challenge was complexity of return to work. So again, with mental health issues, there may be relationship issues or social tensions that can make return to work more difficult. Often lack of resources, people talked about not having enough modified work positions to offer. The complexity of mental illness itself, people worried about relapse or recurrence and how to address that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last but not least issue is this idea of negative workplace culture. So a number of comments about toxic workplace environments that contribute to stress and mental health issues. So how can this person return to work when they're going back into the same situation that caused them to exacerbate their symptoms in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the complex issues and probably quite familiar to many of you. So what do we know about what works? And I'm going to start by saying that we need a lot more research to really document the effectiveness of different approaches. And the focus in the research community is trying to raise funding for practical evidence-based research in the area. And there's a real gap focusing on mental health issues specifically. And much of the work is done right now in the area of physical health, although some of the work, I would argue, with employees who have chronic pain because it's also an invisible issue, has some relevance to the mental health population as well. And I know, sorry, how am I doing for time here?
You're doing great, yeah.
Okay.
I'm learning a lot, so just keep going, Sandra.
I'm just going to highlight three factors that we seem to show that predicts successful return to work. And the first is early intervention. There was a study done in 2002 by the Ontario Medical Association Committee on Work and Health, and they reported that the longer an employee is away from work on disability leave, the less likely it is that that person will return. So they said after 6 months, an individual has only a 50% probability of returning to work. After 1 year, only a 20% chance of returning, and after 2 years, only a 10% chance of returning. So they've really focused on early and safe return to work for people with all kinds of disabilities, so not just mental health, but any kind of disability.
Mm-hmm.
And so early intervention may, for a manager, simply be contacting the employee when they're off sick, letting them know that they're thinking about them, that they're willing to provide support when the person's ready to return to work. And again, the age-old story that people who are off sick for physical problems, whether a broken leg or a heart attack, they often get cards, letters, visits. But when someone is off due to a mental health problem, there's often nothing. People don't know what to say or do. There's this sense of shame or embarrassment. The problem is that this lack of contact can contribute to feelings of anxiety, feelings of isolation, and feeling detached from the organization, which makes it then harder to return. So we know early intervention is important. The second factor I'm just going to touch on is the idea of evidence-based treatment. So many individuals don't receive timely, effective mental health services. A recent survey of Canadians on mental health and well-being found that only half of the people with symptoms of a mood disorder consulted with a professional. And I suspect the stats are even lower if you have an addiction or substance use problem.
Mm-hmm.
And barriers to seeking treatment include lack of awareness of the need for services or the help that is available, maybe stigma associated with mental health problems, maybe difficulty accessing services, whether there's waiting lists or cost, or maybe simply feeling overwhelmed by symptoms.
Yes, and that exactly taps into how we're trying to provide some, through the mentalhealthminute.com site, some evidence-based guidelines, but written in an easy way so people can be aware of what they're getting and take it to their providers to try to get what we know seems to be of most help.
Excellent. Because what I'm arguing is that employees need guidance about what the treatment options are out there and how to access them. So that's the first thing, is kind of knowing what's out there. And then once receiving services, you need to make sure that they're effective. So medication, for example, can be very effective for many conditions, including anxiety and depression. Over 85% of people improve with proper medical treatment, although they may need time to find the right type of medication and time for the medication to take effect. Now, there's a concerning study looking at prescribing practices of family doctors for antidepressants and found that many aren't prescribing according to guideline care.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, you want to make sure that the best practice guidelines are followed with treatment.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is cognitive behavioral therapy is effective for many conditions, needs to be funded, needs to be provided by a trained professional, and have an adequate number of sessions.
And that's a type of talk therapy, maybe 10 to 20 sessions for an hour at a time that certain type of talk therapists can do, right?
Exactly. So if you have just mild to moderate symptoms, there's some research saying that brief intervention may be useful. But if you have moderate to severe symptoms, you may need that longer, more intensive work, and it can be quite effective and helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And another promising area of research is the idea of peer support, so training peer providers who've kind of been through the system as a support to people who are off sick.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there was some animated discussion about kind of what peer support looks like and promoting peer support services.
Yes, and one of our project partners, the National Network for Mental Health, is very strong in their built network, getting people to work, and some peer support links. So and they found that to be extremely invaluable for people.
Mm-hmm. And then the third area I'm going to touch on is this idea of coordinating a return to work plan, so that we need clear communication and cooperation between all stakeholders, and that's a key element in successful return to work. And stakeholders include the worker, the supervisor, occupational health staff, the disability management providers, HR, healthcare providers, and union rep if you're in a unionized environment. And so case management and return to work coordination could be helpful, but you also need an organizational mandate for proactive communication. And again, just to highlight, any communication must respect the employee's right to confidentiality. So
mm-hmm.
It's a bit of a tricky area.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, look, I have a fourth one. Supportive work environment is the other, that the social environment of the workplace is a key factor in return to work. Often employees have concerns about negative judgments from colleagues and supervisors, and the idea of returning to work can evoke a lot of anxiety. Management practices can have a significant impact on the work reintegration process. So if you have support at all levels of the organization for accommodating employees, then return to work is more likely to be effective.
Mm-hmm.
Whether a supportive manager is very important, whether they're just kind of reaching out to the worker when they're off sick, maintaining regular contact, demonstrating flexibility, and also coworkers. So reactions of coworkers can create challenges if they feel that the returning employee is receiving special treatment. So again, be cognizant of this idea of accommodation and how it impacts on coworkers.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this idea of peer support, it may be advisable to designate a support person or a buddy who can ease that transition process. And in the handbook, we have actually a whole chapter on creating healthy workplaces I don't have time to go into. Mm-hmm. But again, this idea of organizational factors, so not only about helping the individual employee, but looking at the organization as a whole and the responsibilities of organizations to pay attention to workplace factors that contribute to employee health and well-being.
Right.
So I'm maybe going to stop there and respond to questions. Mm-hmm. I know, Tom, I know that there was one submitted online in advance. I don't know if you want me to...
Sure. Yeah, go right ahead if you have that to handy, or no, or even the paraphrasing the theme if you had to.
Yeah, it's a lengthy question, but it's actually a really excellent question. It was someone who looks like they work their service provider, and basically the gist of their question is that looking at the research on development of return to work plans after an employee has been off work due to
uh-huh.
mental illness. And this person writes, in my place of work, ease back or return to work plans have traditionally been designed for people who've suffered a physical injury or illness. Very true. This policy limits the plan to an 8-week period.
Mm-hmm.
We've been recently doing some ease backs for employees with mental health issues, and I have some concerns about the limitation of an 8-week period, as this is often inadequate. Is there any best practice around the length of time for a mental health return to work plan?
Mm-hmm.
So good question. Many people want to know kind of what's realistic for a time frame for return to work. And the bottom line is that there's no best practice, although I would say that there's some recognition that the process may take a bit longer for people with mental health issues. And I guess I'd start by emphasizing that return to work needs to be very individualized. So when talking about mental health problems, every person's different in terms of severity of their symptoms, their response to the symptoms, and their rate of recovery. And some people feel a very internal pressure to perform and return to work too soon. And they may come back too soon and might crash again. Others may be highly anxious and delay the process. So I guess you need to be cognizant of that individual's response and individual needs. And the other thing is that treatment itself takes time. Several weeks needed for antidepressant medications and cognitive behavioral therapy. And then the organization, each organization is different in terms of how supportive they are of return to work. So if you have a very supportive work environment with lots of accommodations being put in place, then perhaps return to work may occur sooner.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my bottom line to the person who asked the question is whether you could argue for different protocols depending on complexity of issues. So maybe a time frame for relatively straightforward cases, another for more complex cases where the person's been away for a long time and has a very stressful work environment.
Mm-hmm.
So long answer to a question, but certainly a good one that I think we need more research.
Mm-hmm. Great. Okay. You mentioned a bit about the organizations and putting in best practices and awareness of these issues, and you've made some recommendations. Any suggestions for, I mean, some of these would be fairly visionary for some organizations, and any suggestions on how they would begin implementing that if one was an employer or an organization, because they're busy with the business of their actual business for the most part.
Yeah, sir, I'm just going to pull out my little handbook here.
Sure.
I think really the business case needs to be made. For sure. And in our handbook, in that chapter, we have a whole piece of that as to how to argue that really it will save money in the bottom line in terms of addressing the issues. Sorry, I'm just pulling up my section here.
Yeah.
And
so
there's,
putting
lots of, there's lots of things you can do. I mean, people say that if you're in a big business, you have money, you have resources that you can put towards that.
Mm-hmm.
But I would argue even in small businesses, there is just kind of simple practical things you can do around open communication, around accommodations and recognition of people with different abilities. Accommodations, very simple accommodations. I mean, we have a whole section on providing accommodations, and they're often very little or no capital costs to implementing
yes.
them, whether it be flexible scheduling or
right.
or even education around mental health issues.
Right. And I don't know, it makes me think if there would be, I don't know, again, there's so many things going on in an organization that perhaps a champion within an organization, even within the disability, might be of some assistance.
Yes, absolutely. And again, there's really progressive organizations, and that BC Roundtable website, they actually have best practice employers, so employers kind of leading the way about things that they've done and things that have worked as well. So again, there's lots of leaders, I guess, right now. There's actually a whole website on awards for psychologically healthy workplaces. You can nominate a business to receive an award. So again, trying to reinforce for employers that, you know, there's good PR you can get from doing this too.
Right. So you've mentioned some of the capital costs that they can save in terms of their own budgets, which I think is always of utmost importance to an employer. But many of the things you mentioned include just attitudinal things that don't come at any cost, some flexibility and awareness of that sort of thing.
Oh, absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. It makes me think, we even hired another health provider to work with our team here at the hospital, and at the time they were looking, they wanted to do 4 days a week, not five, because of a certain concern, and they were having trouble finding work, and we accommodated that, and within 2 years they were full-time and have been here for 10 years and a key member of our team, and it's not an issue, and amazed me how that mentality or attitude can be such a barrier, an unfortunate barrier.
Very simple, too, right? I mean, it's not something complex, and it's something that can benefit many people within the organization, right? So, again, progressive workplaces are saying, you know, we think employee retention, employee satisfaction is really important. If you have satisfied employees, they're going to be more productive. You're going to have a better morale. They're going to be more likely to invest time, better customer service. So there's a whole list of benefits for employers to kind of build in a little flexibility, for example.
Yes. Now, Sandra, if I can ask you one myself, you worked for over 10 years in a community mental health setting with people with severe illnesses and concerns.
Yes.
Did you, again, because sometimes the conditions will be permanent or chronic conditions, so they will not be capable of every form of employment based on their condition. Were you able to find any kind of fits or ways to find them or to help work with them and some of the attitudinal barriers when there were productive ways they could contribute?
Yeah, someone had asked me this question before. There's a whole literature on supported employment for people with mental health problems. So again, the new best practice is instead of, so example, you have someone with schizophrenia or a major mental illness and they haven't worked for many, many years, the issue is not how to stay at work, but more how to find work. And I didn't really have time to go into all that literature, but certainly there's lots of evidence right now saying you don't want to have people in long-term pre-vocational training programs. The idea is you want to get people out there, provide supports that they need to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of train in place, then train, I guess is what things is. So again, this idea of supported employment is really important.
Oh, great.
But
well,
again, there's some overlap around, I've listed in your handout, again, I think there's a whole section on reasonable accommodations from Boston University, and they actually list some common accommodations depending on what people's issues are, whether they're cognitive issues or social issues. There's different kinds of accommodations that could be put in place to help those individuals.
Great. You talked about confidentiality and return to work. Could you touch on that a little more for a second, and what any thoughts on what people should tell others they've been off with or how the organizations manage that?
Oh, it's a big issue, the whole issue of disclosure, right? What do you disclose? When do you disclose? What do you say?
Why were you off? Was it your back? Was it your mental health condition?
Yeah, and it's. I don't know if it's resolved, but I think one of the things they say is that employers really don't need to know about diagnosis. And in our book, we have an appendix, I think we have, around different conditions, mental health, mental illnesses. Mm-hmm. But really, we emphasize that employers don't need to know about diagnosis. What they need to know are the functional implications of the person's disability. So the person can say, you know, I'm having difficulty concentrating, so I need more time to complete assignments, or I need to be in a place where there's fewer distractions. So you don't need to say, I have depression, or I have psychosis. I mean, you can talk about the functional issues.
Yeah, and of course,
and then you're you have a right to accommodation.
Mm-hmm. And of course, as a psychiatrist and health provider, we tend to focus on symptom reduction, not on functional capacities as much, which would be more relevant to the work issues. So
there, yes, exactly, and that's one of the problems. Employers say, you know, the diagnostic stuff isn't useful. What I need is, you know, how long do they need before they're better, or you know, how long do they need this accommodation? What accommodation needs to be put in place? So that's part of the problem with the language. People use different language in terms of how they address the issue.
Yes. Great. What about, sometimes when people return, you mentioned the supportive environment when they get back and the accommodations. I think with mental health conditions, people, even if they have been confidential, are concerned that others will notice something about them based on their condition or based on the medication or the treatment in terms of how they're received when they return. I don't know if you have any information or any research or anything to inform that in any way.
Sorry, I'm not sure the question you're asking.
Yeah, people are worried that if they go back to work and they know they've been off with a mental health problem, people think they're strange or they're, to use harsh words, their minds aren't all there. They don't want to talk to them anymore for fear of catching something off them or if they appear drowsy or something of that nature.
I mean, my big thing is, and it's tough, right? I mean, if you're a manager, for example, because our book is geared to employers, if you're a manager and you have someone coming back and maybe there was some social tensions before the person left and you know there's going to be tensions when they return, I think one of the things we say is you really need to prepare the social environment, saying, you know, every single person has a right to accommodation regardless of any kind of disability. Maybe you want to do some proactive education around mental health issues and how common they are, and putting kind of a human face on it. Some people that come out and talk about their mental health issues, depression, may find, I mean, if we think about 1 in 5 people will have mental health conditions, other people will start to talk about it as well and can really free up the organization. But again, it depends, and I think you need some leadership at higher levels of the organization that, you know what, this is part of life. It's mental health problems are very common, and we need to talk about them openly and understand them.
Right.
And address some of the stigma issues.
Fabulous.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, very much so.
Okay.
So I think the other one is let's get right to dollars and cents for a minute. You mentioned that it's actually in employers or organizations' financial interests to deal with this and be proactive and be a leader in the area.
Mm-hmm.
Can you comment a bit about that? Because ultimately I think that's, again, of extremely high concern. Can you share anything with us about that? About like how much will it help us? Just a bit, enough to bother, or?
I'm trying to find my thing here. I think one example that we put in here, best workplaces in Canada, profile of businesses. There are some statistics out there and some actual costs. Savings, and for example, in that BC Business and Economic Roundtable, there's a certain percentage of your payroll costs. I just don't have that information right in front of me. You can actually go to that website and get it. But people were harassing me, saying, you know, it's not only about the money. Yes, there'll be a money bottom line cost saving, but also, I think employers having this social moral responsibility around creating an environment where their employees want to work, and creating healthy workplaces has broader issues beyond even just the bottom line. So, I can't find exact numbers there.
Absolutely, I'm just trying to.
But they're in the handbook.
Yeah. Okay. So there's a win-win both between the social, moral, and ethical things you mentioned and the financial as well. Actually, they come together on this issue, from what I'm
absolutely.
Hearing.
Absolutely. No. Absolutely. Great. And here's one lower. Higher productivity, greater quality of services, greater profit, you're reducing injuries. There's all kinds of benefits.
Okay, great. Well, I don't think I have any other questions. I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to share with us at this time.
No, I think that's it. I guess this is a really emerging area right now. Lots of talk, lots of discussion, and I think in the next few years, hopefully we'll see some advancements in the research around this kind of best practices around dealing with some of these mental health issues.
Great. Thank you, Sandra. I so much thank you for sharing that with us, and I both as a provider and as a person, the loss in human capital, as I call it, or that in people's lives because of the unfortunate lack of understanding, stigma, or if that process isn't managed well, it is such a shame to watch. because when it works so well for everybody. And I do think we're entering a newer age with mental health concerns being better understood. And I really want to thank you for helping sharing this with us, and hope that keeps going in that direction.
All right. Thank you very much.
Our pleasure. So thank you, everyone, for listening in. Hope this has been of interest and has helped you. And we will, again, for more resources and information, including some of the referred to website links that were mentioned today by Sandra Moll, click on www.mentalhealthminute.com. Thank you to the Canadian Council on Learning for helping provide the funding to support our project at this point and for today's teleseminar. So thank you, everybody. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Sandra Moll.